This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by Imeldo. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. Good news story for this week. Australia's gender pay gap has dropped to its lowest level on record at 11.5%, down from 12%, according to the new data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. I know it's still up there, but let's not forget that 2 years ago, Australia's gender pay gap sat at 14.1%. So it's,
dude, that's a
it's
decent
getting
drop.
There.
Even it is, though it isn't sounds it? In 2 years. Grim, that is decent from what we've seen.
A lot better than what it was.
Mm. We'll take lowest. We want lower, but we'll take lowest until we get to even lower.
And you've got some good news, Lou. You've got a good news story.
So, Loz, I don't know how you feel about hearing that your cousin is getting on the good foot and doing the bad thing. But for all my postpartum friends out there that take a little bit longer to have sex like me, I just want to say at the 7 month mark, we finally did it. Didn't feel pain afterwards. I'm not going to go into the details. Like Carrie Bradshaw says, when we colour, oh, her and Big stay out of the lines when they colour. We stay in the lines, but I'm not going to give you the details. But did it? It didn't hurt. No pain. It was at Tuesday at 6 a.m. because it had to be before the kids woke up. Couldn't be the end of the day because I'm too exhausted then. But we peeled off that Band-Aid, ripped it off, and Loz, you do not need to hear any more on that.
Part of me is repulsed, but I'm pleased for you because it already is daunting. I know people don't talk about it, but we should because it's such a big factor to your relationship, and so often no one says anything. So yeah. Good on you, Lou. I'm proud of you.
Thank you very much. And Posey's not sleeping, so that feels like an extra little you know, like good on me, honestly. I'm breastfeeding him, hardly sleeping. So like Hayden, come thank me.
How do you have the time?
Oh, how do you
don't
have
answer
the time?
That. Yeah. I don't want to know.
Well, we woke up at 5:30 a.m. and Hayden just suggested, yeah, anyway, we won't go into that, Loz, because you don't need to know about that and no one else does either. I have to tell you something really funny that happened, speaking of no sleep, and that is that yesterday I was running into a shop to buy a present for my brother's baby and Hayden was in the car. And because I'm so sleep deprived and also just an A-grade idiot, I run out of the shop, rushing as per, open the car door.
Oh, God.
And I nearly jumped into the car with an 18-year-old female stranger. It was not my car. It wasn't even the same color as my car. It was just the same brand as my car.
Do you know what? Don't worry, Lou. We've all been there. Today, I actually dropped off my car for a service. I gave the guy my key and then he spoke about something, you know, how long's it been since your car's been, I don't know, some bob rubbish. And at the end, I said, far out. Like, I was checking all my pockets and I was like, oh my God, I don't know where my key is to even give to you. And he goes, you gave it to
car,
me 5 minutes ago.
Well, that like, makes okay. me feel a little bit better.
See
when
later.
I opened the court car door, the girl goes, oh my God. She got the pride of her life. I was like, I'm so sorry. This is not my car. As she realized, because it was her car. She was in the driver's seat and it was charcoal. My car is black. So that's a little bit scary. But today, Lozzie, what are we talking about? What is parental mental load? Managing a household is worth $3.8 trillion in economic value, survey says. I then asked the pollers two things. One is basically my segment for this week and one's the community poll. The first part of that is looking at the return to work with hindsight, what we do differently, what we tell ourselves and how we felt in the lead up. And then the second part is obviously all about sleep. So it's not about sleep schedules because I feel like that's a whole segment in itself. It's more about how you dealt with the emotions and the mental capacity that you're at when you couldn't get a night's sleep. So let's take it away, my friend. Tell me about the parental mental load.
According to a survey, if US preteens were paid the median age for the invisible labor load that goes into their mental load, nearly got through that, would equate to around $3.8 trillion per year. The mental load of parenting, the unseen labor involved in managing a household and children from planning to schedule and overseeing daily activities, has long been recognized as a significant time investment for parents. We've spoken about this so many times, and yet the studies continue coming out and we continue to talk about it. The findings reveal that the average parent invests around 32 hours weekly in this unseen labor. So previously it's come out and it was said, you know, I feel like it was like, I don't know, an extra 15 hours or something like that. But it just seems to keep increasing and increasing. So if these parents were to be compensated for their efforts at the median hourly wage in the US, they would earn an additional $60,000 annually.
Oh, I would love to be paid for my efforts at home. Can't someone just pay me?
Isn't that wild? And to be clear, this does not include the time that parents spend playing with their children.
This is literally the mental load.
Yes. So instead, it's the time they spend planning, including managing schedules, planning holidays and breaks, which, you know, I absolutely love to do. Well, I don't love to do it, but I love being on
you
holiday.
You love to be on the holiday.
Yeah.
Oh, I and love figuring out too, meals. To be fair.
Oh, fucking meal plan is
figuring out meals.
Worst. It's so bad. So more than half of parents surveyed reported spending more time on the logistical parts of parenting than on the joyful ones. The mental load also includes thinking about day-to-day needs of the household and worrying about the health and happiness of the family, which in winter exponentially increases. Because I don't know about you, but there's just sickness every second effing day.
I think Posey's on the cusp of, she was just coughing so much through the episode that's going to be released tomorrow. Emily Dornbush was aware. It had just started basically as she walked into the room. It was our first in-person Ready or Not interview. Oh, she's really started coughing. I'm a bit nervous that she is about to derail my whole week.
That's exactly right. So when your kid gets sick, your mental load is going to like triple because you've got to figure out, okay, who's covering for me? What can I do while she's sleeping? Do I need to take her to the doctor? Like all sorts of shit that just pops up on the radar at the last minute. A nightmare. This made me laugh, this bit. More than a quarter, and I reckon you're in this, more than a quarter of the parents surveyed said that they had completed an internet search on the tooth fairy's going rate for a tooth and what color baby poop is normal. You've definitely done that, haven't you? Not the you're not at the tooth fairy stage. The poo color.
Oh, nah. I don't.
You haven't?
I've never looked up poo color. Nah.
Oh, then it's me. I would be contributing to these stats.
You're
I'm
the
Googling
poop
this shit
gal.
All the time. It's so bad.
I don't know if her poo color has ever given me reason to stress. I'm going to go check it now though, probably. And then
yeah, but
look
it's
it
not
up.
The stress. It's not even, I'm not talking about the stress factor. It's like I Google shit off a conversation that somebody else is having. Like, okay, here's an example. Book week this week.
Oh, book week. Let's talk book week.
I cannot cope. We need to effing ditch this. It doesn't need to be an entire week. Let's just have one dedicated day. I can't have five outfits. I can't.
So it's so funny that you bring this up because these sorts of days make me angry. And I know that it's obviously a trigger for me because I don't think I'm a very good mum in this way. Because I think what a joyful thing. That's so gorgeous that kids are, you know, going to school, going to kinder, going to wherever my son goes, childcare, whatever that place is called. Going in these outfits and with books that they love. How great. But wow, I forgot all about it. Hades took Ray to daycare this morning. I was just going to dress him in Cars outfits that he already owns because he loves Cars and that's great for him. And there's a Cars book. Do you think I remembered? And do you think that Hayden knew? Because of course my name's on the childcare forms.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of tension going on in my head of Lucy, have some joy for the children. And then also, this is too much. We're already finding it hard to
at
find
capacity.
Time in the day. Where am I going to get the time to do this? And then there's a really interesting piece around how it makes you feel as a mum. For example, a friend of mine just loves crafts. So this is her thing. She loves to do this. And I think that is beautiful. That is brilliant. And another friend was like, oh, I suck. And my friend said to that friend in a group chat, yeah, but your way of bringing joy is the amazing food you cook. Mine is the crafts. And I thought it's a really good reminder to not beat yourself up because we all have our ways in which we might excel in areas of parenting and other areas might not suit us. But book week is definitely a trigger for me because it brings together my worst elements, memory and creativity. I'm bad at both those things. And as a result, Ray went to daycare today just in very normal clothes.
See, I actually love dress-ups, as in I love it. Like I love kids dressing up and I'm all about it. I'm not about it every day.
I know, but the trick is because kids go on different days. It's so frustrating. So how do they combat that?
I just hate it. I'm like, dude. Also, part of me thinks I'll just send Sienna in the same outfit every day, you know?
Oh, definitely. We have a few different car stops.
He won't do that.
And, oh, because that's the other thing. Ray doesn't even realize that he's gone today in not a costume while everyone else is in a costume. Like, it won't totally register for him. But we have different Cars t-shirts, and that's what I'm going to do for his other 2 days, just put on the different Cars t-shirts, and hopefully he forgives his mummy that she did not remember Book Week.
Oh, I find it exhausting. Anyway, on that, it said, mum spent more mental energy making sure their kids had clothes that fit, there you go, or Book Week clothes, and staying on top of medical forms for the family.
I need to stay on this because these are, when I talk about how amazing Hayden is, these are the things that definitely still sit on my plate that I forget about at times. So because you're the parent on parental leave, that at least first year of medical appointments, the mental load of it really does seem to sit on you because you're the one that's with the bloody child. And I do get that in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, I think that's just fair. Like, as much as I'm for equality, I'm realistic in the fact that you're the one at home with the child. Unfortunately, that sometimes means you have to take them to the appointment. Not always, by the way. But the other part of that is the bloody Ray's growing out of all of his clothes, probably for the first time ever, because he was really little. There were clothes that I bought him for when he was one that really he's only just growing out of now at just over two. So we've actually finally got to like the dregs of what we haven't pre-planned for. And the other day I was really grumpy to Hayden, being like, I've just updated his whole wardrobe. You go and do X, Y, and Z. So feeling those mental loads.
Yeah, I feel like I'm at that stage now too where poor Zave's wearing like capris.
Yeah, Ray's like in like cropped jumpers. And I'm like, Hayden, why are you putting him in a cropped jumper? Do you think that's keeping his midriff warm? And then why aren't you realizing the kid needs new clothes?
Yeah, feels. It says dads were more likely to report focusing on the family finances. So things have changed, but sadly, not that much. Many parents revealed that the extensive time devoted to organizing activities detracts from time spent with their partners. So nearly half report that these scheduling issues led to arguments and miscommunications, and almost one in four have turned to couples therapy specifically to manage the stress and challenges posed by family scheduling demands. I can totally see why.
I'm going to relate this in a roundabout way to the sleep thing too. So I have been semi trying to sleep train Posey, not in some huge way, but in the way of putting her in her own room now. She's not in the room with us. She's just moved out. She's in a big girl cot. She's in different sleep sacks. I'm trying to go in and do the padding thing as opposed to feeding her. That hasn't worked, by the way. Lol, joke is on me. Posey gained a point there and I lost 25,000 points. But then on top of that, I'm now just sleeping in the bed next to her because she's teething and screaming at night at the moment. So I've stopped sleep training for a bit. And Hayden gets all like, which is really nice in a lot of ways, gets all offended that like I'm not sleeping in the bed with him, even though, you know, we've only just had our first lot of sex and nothing's happening at nighttime.
I feel so weird when you say that.
Darling. But he gets it like, oh, that's a shame that you're sleeping in that room. And I'm like, please don't add to the guilt and the million different ways in which I'm feeling pulled. Like, I don't want to sleep in the bed with a baby that's crying every hour. Don't think for a second that this is a choice, and don't make me feel bad about it and make me feel, yeah, like I'm being pulled in every which way. It just like adds to the mental load. I'm like, just let me get through this bit. I want to get sleep again. And for now, this is what has to happen.
Yeah, totally true. And it's a communication around it, right? So at least you're saying something, Lou. But for other people, including myself, it gets to a point where like I'm like, fuck, that was an annoying comment. And then I leave it and continue on. And then something else happens and I'm like, okay, I'm losing it. I'm going to flip my lid.
I'm about to blow up.
Like, unless you say something at the time, it does become this big miscommunication because what Hayden said to you wasn't a bad thing.
No.
He just misses like you.
Yeah, it's kind.
But the way you interpret it is different.
Yes. It's funny too. I've noticed lately that I'm getting really angry and I actually apologized to Hayden the other day because, oh, I know what happened. Lol. We were leaving, visiting someone in hospital and I dropped half the chicken sandwich from Morning Market, that gorgeous shop in Prahran.
Oh, so beautiful.
I dropped half of my chicken sandwich all over me and over the car floor and I absolutely lost it. And he was like, you can have my chicken sandwich. And I was like, it's actually not about the chicken sandwich. I just feel like I'm getting vomited on all the time. There's mess everywhere all the time. And I'm just sick of looking down and seeing shit all over me. And I lost it. And I had to apologize later because it was nothing he did. It was nothing he could have done. But the anger from the mental load, if you don't talk about it in the time, I couldn't agree more. It leads to, it simmers and then it explodes. So I don't always talk about it perfectly in the moment. Don't worry about that.
So there is one silver lining, and I'll end it on a slightly positive but yet negative note. These researchers found that those who took on more cognitive load were happier with their family life and reported better job performance.
Interesting. So,
I mean, that's one thing. It does say, though, nonetheless, these researchers concluded that the negatives of bearing the mental load still outweighed any positives.
But, yeah, well, when I was just trying to log in to this Zoom, I couldn't get the internet going. Posey was crying. Hades and I just sold our house. That was actually going to be my other update, is that Hades and I sold our house. That was a great news story because the market is tough. The interest and the interest rates are wild. We can't even service our own mortgage. So it's actually a real financial relief. And we've bought something way more affordable. Our mortgage is going to go down. And we've bought an old shack that actually will have a full-on podcast studio. So there will be a day where you and I are going to start recording in person, which is really exciting news because people might not realize, but we have a lot of internet connection issues that happen. But coming back to the internet connection issue and speaking of sort of the mental load and the stress of it all, I was trying to get this working and then Hayden's calling me being like, I've spoken to the mortgage broker and I need you to do X, Y, and Z so that we can get our deposit from selling our own house. Posey was crying on the ground. And the feeling that you get in those moments, it's like,
I know, it's like, just hurry up. Bad. Like, I can't do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. And all of those things on their own aren't too stressful, but together, the cortisol reaction within me is so dramatic. It's terrible.
Yeah. It can feel like that too. I also think, and we'll move into this in a minute, not having sleep affects every aspect of your life.
You forget what it does to you. Even if you feel okay in that moment, you forget like what the compounding effect is, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It's actually so difficult to function.
Hey, Loz, before we get into today's episode, we're partnering with Imeldo, a brand that makes very fun, eclectic, bold, bright, and wonderful jewelry pieces and accessories. And if there's anything that I've been learning from our former guest on Ready or Not, and also from one of the panelists on our careers night for the mums, Liv Brown from Rattle Style, is that you can easily make yourself feel a little bit better and elevate a look by adding some fun jewelry. You've been a fan of Imeldo for ages. I actually told you recently that I knew her. And you said you've been shopping there for years. Tell me why you love the brand.
It's just a really fun way to like jazz up your mood, number one, and also your outfit, number two. I bought a pair of their earrings recently. They're beautifully made. They last a lifetime. And they're the type of pieces that every time you wear a pair of their earrings, someone is guaranteed to comment on it. They're that good.
Yes, it's a mood lifter. There's color, there's fun shapes, fun textures, and all around just a fun brand made by a mum for all the mums looking for a bit of fun out there in their accessories. So you can get 20% off using the code READY20, that's READY20, at imeldo.com. And speaking of being able to function, a time where we really feel like we need to turn our brains back on is when we return to paid work after parental leave. First question for you, Loz, what is the first word that comes to mind when you think about how you felt in the lead up to returning to paid work first time around?
Nervous.
Second time around?
Excited.
So, before I get to the poll, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm really excited to ask you this. It's a bit of a quiz this time, which is a little bit different to guessing percentages. Yes. I want to know, firstly, what you would go back and tell yourself about the return to paid work, especially that first time around.
You still got it. You're going to be fine. You won't invest time in office politics, and instead you will probably invest time in people in the workplace that make you feel really good about your return to work.
That is sage advice, my friend. What did you find harder, the emotions or the logistics?
Logistics.
I agree, actually. And I think that you would have guessed for me that it was the emotions. In the end, I think it's probably because I returned to paid work in such a staged and flexible way, but the logistics were much harder than the emotions for me in the end. My next question for you is, what would you do differently with hindsight?
I would better plan for food, snacks, allow myself extra time to get places so they didn't feel rushed, and really factor in the drop-off and pick-up situation to work. Actually, do you know what I would do before that? I would have a discussion with my manager just about the realities of what return to work may look like the first couple of weeks, so that I alleviated that pressure off myself originally. That's what I would do.
Great advice. We're going to hear so much more incredible advice from our pollers. So I'm actually going to get into it, and then we're going to get into the sleep part of this, because I want to ask you how you dealt with Zave's sleep, because I know you had a pretty challenging period there. Before we do, Loz, I want you to guess. This is like maybe a difficult quiz item to give you, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
I want you to guess the five most common words that came up when I asked our pollers to give us one word to describe how they felt in the lead up to the return to paid work.
Anxious, nervous, worried. Some might say excited, sad. I feel like all of those emotions are usually negative. Am I right?
You've done really well. Okay, so it's anxious, nervous, dread,
yeah,
conflicted, mm-hmm, and then excited to end on a positive note. And yeah, there were a lot of those too. And another really good one that wasn't in the top five, but another good one just to give more of a positive spin for anyone that's freaking the fuck out, is relieved. So there are some good ones in there. But well done. You got 4 out of 5 just then, my friend.
Thanks.
Now, do you think the pollers rated the logistical or emotional side of the return to paid work as more stressful?
I would say logistical.
So logistical was 44%, emotional was 56%. I actually thought the emotional side was going to be way higher.
Really?
I did think that, because the lead up especially can have you, like, I know in the lead up I felt way worse about it than when it actually happened.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? You always build it up in your head, and then often it can work out. Like, it's still stressful, but actually going to work can be nice for a lot of reasons. So perhaps it's not as black and white as you think. And then you're like, oh, I do still get a lot of time with my kids. It's not like I just never see them again. So I think that when I actually did return or start to return to some work, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. My next question, and I think I have asked you a version of this before, so we'll see how good your memory is. I returned to work at ... postpartum. So the options are before 6 months, 6 to 12 months, 12 to 18 months, or 18 months.
6 to 12.
Yeah, well done. 46% there. The second most common was 12 to 18 months at 35%. Mm-hmm. Gee, we're lucky in Australia.
We are so lucky.
Then it was 14% for before 6 months, so pretty low, and after 18 months was 5%.
I wonder if we ask that question in like 6 months' time, whether it would be less.
Yeah.
Like more expensive, and people are starting to return earlier.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. But on the other end of the spectrum, paid leave from the government is longer. So I wonder how that plays into it.
Yeah, true. True.
We will definitely ask that. I think that's a really good follow-up. Did you feel a sense of imposter syndrome when you returned to paid work? Firstly, Lozzie, did you round one?
Yes, slightly.
Yeah, it's not an emotion you spend too much time on, isn't it? Is it?
I don't feel like it's really a... And so Phoebe actually touched on this in our event at the memo last week. I didn't give it a lot of time, no, but mainly because for me, the environment had changed, not necessarily my role. So I felt confident in my role. It's more so that the...
Oh, you felt like you were walking into a new space.
Yeah. So the management team had changed. And obviously it was COVID. So I hadn't been in the office for ages. And I was like, oh, there's so many new people that have been hired that I've never seen before.
Such a common experience too. So what percentage of our pollers do you think felt imposter syndrome when they returned?
I would say quite high, maybe like 65.
Oh, she's good. 63%, 37% said no. Well done.
Yeah, okay.
I then asked them to talk us through why they felt imposter syndrome. I'll give a few of the top answers and those that sort of really cover what everyone else said, because we did get a lot of people write in. One person said my brain was not in the work groove. I'd forgotten how to talk the talk. It is so hard when you've been in such a different environment to all of a sudden click back into gear. I felt like they survived without me for a year, and that would be pointed out to me. That's another interesting one. Even just when people make new work friends with the person that took your role, in a lot of ways you're happy, but you're thinking, oh, fuck, they like that person more than me and they're probably better at their job. That's really hard. My workplace altered my role, so there wasn't the ability to feel confident. That's a really hard one.
That's
a really common experience for mums. And last one here was lost all my confidence. Things changed and moved fast, and I was trying to prove my worth. Another bloody common experience. A lot of other people mentioned that they were so tired that it was hard to even really clock back on in any big way to begin with, which I'm knowing all about right now. I then asked, when it came to confidence and imposter syndrome, is there anything you did to prepare yourself for the return to paid work? So I'm thinking of our friends that are doing this soon. What can we tell them? Someone said they read through all of their old work and spent a lot of time on LinkedIn. That's a really interesting one. Getting yourself back into work mode, maybe almost getting to know yourself, your work self. That's a really great piece of advice. Stayed in touch with people who could share confidently what was going on culture-wise. That would have been handy for you.
So important. I strongly recommend that. I think it's so important just to keep your finger on the pulse with somebody that you know, trust, and like, so that it doesn't feel like additional work.
Yeah, that's great. Trips into the office while on leave to remind myself I was known, appreciated, and still needed. So similar to that last one, but this one more of just knowing your place in the team. I think that's really good advice. And quite a few people said faking it till I could make it. So just showing up, doing what everyone else does. We always forget this. We all have imposter syndrome for better or worse. And just fake it till you make it. Try to catch up at whatever pace works for you. And no one knows how stressed you feel deep down. We all think they do, but they don't. And the last one that you'll love, Lozzie. Person says Botox and new clothes. Brilliant.
Oh, yes, girl.
You get it. I love the honesty.
All about that.
If you could go back in time, what would you do differently about planning the return to paid work? This is a great one. Worry a little bit less about the logistics. It will all work out.
I think the hardest part about it is sometimes you are inevitably going to be late. With the operation of school hours, it's just not, it's too hard if you have to do a drop off. Like, it's not going to work for you to get to work on time. And as long as you're honest about that and you let it go, as in be like, today I'm going to be at work at 9:15, then it's not a problem. But if you're trying to rush to get there by 4:05 and your school doesn't open until 8:30, like, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
I could not agree more. Someone else said, not worry so much about my exclusively breastfeeding, bottle refusing baby. He will be fine. I think that's a really nice one for the parents to know out there that are wondering how on earth their baby is going to be fed when they're not there. A lot of people cited either better preparation for childcare in terms of wait lists. A lot of people also mentioned saving more money. The last two, which are really common ones, are setting clearer boundaries on your role within the workplace, not feeling guilty about going home when you need to, and actually just sticking to the hours that you're meant to work and not having that old mentality that so many of us have, which is just work, work, work. And then the last two here, have a more solid discussion with my partner about sharing the load, paid work and mental. And this person will just make a few parents feel a little bit better that think they might enjoy going back to work. And that is that this person would actually want to go back to work rather than be a full-time stay-at-home mum. So they were obviously feeling like, oh no, I just want to stay at home with my child. And then they realized, actually, no, this breakdown of having part-time work and part-time mumming is actually working for
me. It's good. Yeah.
Which I couldn't agree with more. As much as I love mumming, I always need a bit of work. I then asked what advice that they would give to their former selves. The first piece here is be more upfront about what you want in the workplace. That is a brilliant piece of advice. We spend so much time apologizing and feeling like they're doing something good to us, because why wouldn't they just hire that young 20-year-old that can be there whenever? But you're good at what you do. You're hired for a reason. Be more upfront about what you want and what you need. There's actually less people talent out there that you're better than you think. That just feeds perfectly into what we were just talking about. So know your worth.
Yeah, it's so true. if you present yourself as confident and you back your ability and you're good at what you do, it'll come through very obviously in your job. And don't forget,
men.
Skills that you've learned, it's not as if you've forgotten them. It's not as if they go away. It's like
writing. You just might need to find them again.
First time you get on, you might not be perfect. After a week, you're gunning it. You're slaying those BMX bike trails. God, like you're killing it.
Slaying.
You know?
That's so brilliant.
So sometimes you just got to put it into perspective.
I've got a few more for you here. I'll quick fire them for you. It's just a job. So that's a great reminder. Don't forget, it is just a job. Get your groceries delivered, you absolute maniac. I'm obsessed with that bit of advice. You're even better, smarter, and wiser than you were before. You can do this. It will just take time. Balance is hard, but not impossible. And last but not least, you are one of many women who have experienced this. This is normal.
It is. Yes, which is why I think it's so important to connect with other like-minded people in your organization that have gone through the same thing.
I couldn't agree more. Talking about
when you're struggling,
what didn't.
Absolutely talk about it. And also, it allows you to form a connection with somebody at work that doesn't necessarily have to be about work, you know? If you're having a bad day with your kids, you can be like, oh my God, what did you do when you had to take 4 sick days off in your first 2 weeks because your kid had conjunctivitis, croup, and hand, foot, and mouth? Like this
shit.
And
what did
happens.
Your manager say to you and how did they deal with it? Did they make you feel better or worse?
Exactly.
Couldn't agree more. That's, I think, one of the biggest pieces of advice is talking to people within your organization that have done it. The next question was, did you find that your wardrobe didn't fit your potentially changed body and did this stress you out? So the options were big time, sort of, and no. What do you think won out here?
Oh, I think sort of.
Big time was 51%, sort of 38%, and no 11%. It's so annoying and unfair that, like, I'm all for the body changing because it has to, but it's just annoying that you then can't open your wardrobe and wear the exact same shit. It's like another thing to bloody think about.
Yeah,
and that's why you need to
annoying follow
Rattle Style to make it a bit more fun, I think.
But it's also a nice thing to do when you go back to work. Like, just treat yourself to one or two items if you can afford it. They don't have to be expensive.
No,
they just need to make you feel good about yourself. Oh,
couldn't
absolutely
agree more. I then put up a bit of like a longer piece of how I've been feeling lately. And that's that I've returned to paid work a bit earlier this time. And I'm doing a lot of work with Posey around me or asleep and rushing and just feeling like for the first time in a way that I didn't feel as much with my return to work with Ray, that I'm being pulled in a million directions and I'm not always giving my best at work. Like I'm missing little lines off emails and realizing a few days later that I didn't see one thing. And it's not the end of the world, but at the time it feels like the end of the world for me. And I've been having these moments of like, why would they want me on this job? Why wouldn't they get someone without kids? Which is totally opposite to how I feel, obviously. I think parents that work are amazing and that we're, you know, our distractions are probably just different to that child-free version's distractions. But you always just think like, oh, why would they hire me? And if I really interrogated this, I know I'm doing a good job, but I've been really beating myself up. So I asked people what their self-talk was to get them through these moments of self-doubt. A lot of people noted the fact that we know how to get shit done. And I think that is true for a lot of mums. Not all mums feel this way, but I think it is true for heaps of us. Someone said they started doing therapy because of this. If it ever gets to the point where I think I need it, I think that is such a great idea. Just for a bit of solidarity, someone said, I don't know, but geez, this is my head right now. Another piece of advice, people who know mothers know we are focused and capable because we have to be. And someone said, which is just a brilliant way to end this little bit, is want something done, ask a busy woman. And I could not agree more. Second last one from the parenting and return to work piece is let's remind parents who might be about to do it of the favorite bits. What do you think they said, Lozzie? Because I know that you're going to know what they said.
About their favorite bits of returning to work.
Yeah.
Oh, I could list 1,000. Washing your hair, doing your makeup. Finding something nice to wear that's not activewear or PJs, having a hot coffee, speaking to people, not about your kids' nappies, poos, banter, anything kid-related. If man, at the end of a day, when someone says, oh, great work, thanks for submitting that. Oh, how beautiful. Like,
oh, that
you don't
is a gorgeous
get that at
feeling.
Home.
You don't get that from
not,
your
not
kids,
from your
that's
kids.
For sure.
They're like,
nothing is good
the
enough.
There's so many things. Like, I could go on for ages on this.
You've listed nearly all of them. Two that you haven't listed, actually three. One person said money, money, money with the money emoji.
Yes, financial
independence.
That.
So absolutely good.
Absolutely.
Another one was the commute. It's heaven. You used to think of the commute as hell before kids, but it's heaven when you have kids because you get to sit in silence, hopefully, unless their daycare's around the corner from where you're going. And then the last one is going to the toilet in silence.
Yes, feels. It's beautiful.
My last question about returning to paid work was how people let their motherhood show up. So are they talking very candidly and openly about their kids, and are they bringing them in the conversation, or are they sort of acting like they don't exist? Here's what people had to say, and the pendulum really swung both ways here. Feel like I have to hide sleep deprivation, otherwise proud of my growth as a person. I don't tell people at the start, helps me to compartmentalize and probably to get hired. Sad, but true. The next person said balance. I don't hide them, but do watch to not center all around them. I think that's probably a fair and good approach. I'm open about joining meetings by phone during school run and extra activities to make a point sometimes to those making 3:30 p.m. meetings and the juggle I do daily. Good for you. People deserve to know that. It's a rude meeting time for mine, I think for anyone, but especially for parents. I'm a nurse, so it seems to fit in well with motherhood, the whole nurturing side. A teacher mentioned that too, that it really added some relatability and that they could really sort of level with parents. I cannot shut up about my kids, so it's sucked into everyone I work with, and I love that. And someone else said, confidently displaying being a mum. Good for you. Now, Lozzie, before I get to sleep, how do you show up as a mum at work?
I mean, I feel like being a mum is just part of who I am. Like when people ask, what do you do on the weekend? It would be remiss of me not to mention that I spent time with my kids. That's genuinely what I did. I mean, I don't have to talk about them every minute of the day, but when the topic comes up about a question that would naturally entail my children, I'll just say, or if they're sick or if I get a phone call or something like that from daycare, I'll say, sorry, guys, I've got the call from daycare. I've got to pick up the kids. As in, I don't think I'm one of those people that like comes into work and is like, here's a photo that my kid drew me this week, or I don't open up the conversation like that. But when I'm asked, I'm always honest.
So you're probably finding the balance like that person mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Lozzie, to sleep. I got so much advice here and it hurts my heart that I can't read it all out. I reckon there's about 50 DMs here. But firstly, before I get to it, so Posey is not sleeping. And I think it's probably started more as just her waking a lot for feeds, but lately she must be teething because she is waking up screaming every second hour, I'd say. So I was doing a bit of sleep training there and I'm trying to get a little bit more set in my routine during the day, but I have thrown that sleep training overnight out the window, like patting her every 6 minutes or whatever and trying not to feed because the gal is teething and she's beside herself and I just cannot keep her off the boob when she's teething because she's too upset and it's too stressful. There were nights there where I was basically in tears because she just wouldn't sleep and I needed her to sleep.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you need to follow something that is going to work for that period in time for you and your family and your overall mental health. If you're trying to do that tapping every 6 minutes and it's not for you, can it?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because I have been feeling so anxious. Before we get to what the advice of our community was, what did you do? I know you obviously went to sleep school with Zave eventually, but if we talk about the emotions and the mental game of how you dealt with it, so not the strategy and the sleep schedules and whatnot, how did you emotionally and mentally deal with a really bad night of sleep?
I think for the first little while with Zave, when he was a really bad sleeper, I dealt with it by getting fresh air the next day, by keeping myself busy, by trying not to think about it and get stuck in my head around it or Google too much. And I also, I know it's a bit of a counterproductive way of doing things, but I also actually voided a lot of advice because at that point in time, I wasn't really willing to do anything about it other than what I felt comfortable with. So when people were like, maybe try this, maybe try that, I was like, I'm actually not going to do any of that. So I don't even want to ask the question.
And that's actually why I framed this question to everyone about sort of the emotions and the mental game of it, because she is teething. I was thinking to myself, I can't really take on anyone's advice at the moment because she's literally screaming all night, every night, and I can't keep a screaming baby just screaming. Like, it's just too stressful.
Also,
so that's such good advice.
Yeah, you know yourself and you know your baby and you know what's going to work best for both of you. Like, you are the expert in your own mental well-being and essentially at this stage in your child's as well. Like, she's reliant on you. So that's another thing that you got to add to your load. But I just kept myself busy and I was probably one of those people that just cracked on because I had to until I couldn't any longer.
So I feel the same way as you most of the time. I definitely have my sort of sad, or not sad, but my stress moments where I'm like, I am so cooked. This is a joke. But it's more during the night that it upsets me. I think during the day I handle it all right. But it's more during the night when it's actually happening and you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And she's going to wake up Ray and blah, 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 blah. So I asked everyone, how do you deal with those emotions? Beautiful advice. And I wish I could read it all out, but here's some tips. Every night I would tell myself tonight might be better, and eventually it was. And also croissants and coffee helped too. I love a good coffee and croissant.
So do I. Oh, I love a croissant. My God. So good.
A few people mentioned that they either saw a sleep specialist or that they paid just for a night nurse or an overnight nanny, whatever you call them, just for one night. And then that just helped them sort of reset and then they could handle it from there. And then they started sleep training.
I mean, I did that.
Yeah, which is a great tip. And I will consider sleep school down the line if I have to. I have a feeling I won't need to, and that they're a real problem right now is just the teething, but we will see. A lot of people mentioned natural light first thing, protein every meal, and nasal breathing. On the topic of nasal breathing, people mentioned doing a 5-minute meditation in the morning just to reset. Yeah. The more you think about it, the more anxiety it will cause. Go into each night without expectations. Last night I felt so much better when I was talking to my motherhood group and we were all sort of in a similar position of trying to sleep train. And then they all said to me, Luce, drop that. She's obviously upset and teething. You don't need it right now. And last night I went to bed feeling so much more relaxed that I was just going to go back to sort of co-sleeping and feeding after that first wake up instead of doing the sort of padding thing that was causing like so much anxiety. Like the other night, Hayden and I were just getting scared to go to bed. And I would eventually go to him and be like, I'm so sorry, you're going to have to rock her. And he would come back and just be like, every time she falls asleep, I try to put her down, she wakes up again. It was just not working. So dropping that all together and dropping the expectations could not have helped more. Showering and skincare every day made me feel somewhat normal. Love those little rituals that make you feel better.
Yeah.
And my last one here is my mantra was surrender from Mama Matters, and it's amazing for normalizing sleepless babies. I said last one, but I have one more because I think this is important and it gets said a lot, I know, but that is that none of this lasts forever. And it is fucking important to remind yourselves of that. You often think like, I live here now. I live in the no sleep land. I know for some people, sleep can always be a challenge, but for the most part, it hopefully will get easier. So thank you to everyone for that advice. I will update you maybe in a month. Let's see what happens. Whenever I turn a corner, I'll update the people.
Fleeting. Exactly. It's fleeting. And also on that, I think the other thing that I do think is helpful, and it's not like advice so much, but it's just cancel the shit that doesn't need to be done. Because when you're struggling with sleep, it can, like, every other thing that gets added to your plate can feel so overwhelming, and your friends never, ever care if you're like, I'm so sorry, like, we had the worst night's sleep, I just can't today. And if they do care, I mean, maybe you need to reassess. Yeah, exactly.
Change your sleep life and your friendship life.
Yeah.
We're throwing everything out the window. And on that note, Lozzie, Posey is waking and we are clocking
off. Perfect timing. If you have loved today's episode, please leave us a review and follow us on readyornot.pod. See you next week.